Welcome to the former Royal Canadian Air Force No. 5 Clinton. I'm Rob Bundy, and I lived on this base in the 1950s when my dad was stationed here as a lieutenant in the Air Force. As a former top-secret Air Force base and military installation, Vanastra is quite a unique community. In 1941, the Royal Air Force knew they had to relocate their radar school together with the research and development and associated laboratories from the UK to Canada to avoid destruction by the enemy during World War II. Great Britain desperately needed trained technicians and mechanics to operate and maintain their new technology, radar. Radar made it possible to identify incoming enemy aircraft and directed fighters to the right place to intercept the attacking bombers, a technology that was key to winning the Second World War. With 20 coastal radar stations up and running by the beginning of the war, England sent an SOS to Canada requesting electronic specialists to counter German bombing raids. And Canada answered the call. 5,000 Canadian and 3,000 American and British trainees graduated between 1941 and 1945 from the Clinton base. The initial airbase was established in 1941 by the Royal Air Force with the purchase of the Tyndall Farm, a 100-acre plot of ploughed land. The farm met the requirements of topography, remoteness, and sufficient electricity. It was recorded that Royal Air Force personnel arrived at the radio school on July 21, 1941, and they must have been somewhat discouraged by what they saw. Buildings in all stages of construction, no roads, lots of mud, oat fields, and enormous mosquitoes. Until the airmen's barracks were completed, the men slept in tents. Clinton churches were asked to open their homes to airmen so they could take a bath or shower. An electrified fence was erected around the perimeter of the training compound, topped with barbed wire and floodlights at night. Due to security classifications, no reference to radar was allowed for the training site or for personnel involved. It was not until well after the war had ended that area residents learned what was actually happening at the Clinton Air Base. An airbase without planes or a runway. One student from the 1941 class recalled having to remain in class until 11 p.m. one night because a page was missing out of a notebook. Notebooks were checked before the students left the compound, and one day a page was missing and no one could be dismissed until it was found. The station continued under Royal Air Force command until it was turned over to the Royal Canadian Air Force in 1944. After the war, the base grew as radar became even more important with the nuclear threat during the Cold War. RCAF Clinton was designated a Royal Canadian Air Force Signal School and continued with a wide variety of education in addition to its radar and communications curriculum. In the mid-1950s, the permanent married quarters known as Adstro Park was constructed with 217 housing units. The new Protestant chapel, officers, NCOs, and other ranks quarters, and a 12-classroom school were built in the 1950s as well. This school replaced the small school located in the photo section building, which opened for the children of five families in September 1948. The base was renamed Canadian Air Force Base Clinton in 1966. At its peak, the base grew to 250 acres with an on-site population of over 2,000 people. The base was shut down in 1971, shortly after the Royal Canadian Navy, the Canadian Army, and the Royal Canadian Air Force were unified into a single Canadian Armed Forces. Rotama Investment and Development Corporation bought the former base for $468,000 lock, stock, and barrel. The president, John Van Gastel, held a contest to rename CFB Clinton. Margaret Rudd, a resident of Clinton, submitted the winning name Vanastra, and she received a free home. The Van part of the name honors John Van Gastel and the Astra comes from the Air Force motto, which translates as "Through adversity to the stars." Over time, the old military buildings have been converted to residential and industrial uses. Oh, and fun fact, Finastra was featured on comedian Johnny Harris's show, Still Standing, Finastra in Recreation Center, 26 Toronto Boulevard. The tour starts at the former Protestant chapel. In 1973, the first civilian residents of Finastra formed the Finastra Community Association. One of their first objectives was to appoint a recreation committee to determine the facilities that residents wanted, and then to put them in place. Through a community questionnaire, it was determined that residents wanted the use of the swimming pool and wanted an arena, community hall, refurbished playgrounds, and a daycare facility. The Royal Canadian Air Force outdoor pool at the gymnasium had been allowed to deteriorate to the point where repairs were going to be more costly than building a new facility near the housing project. The municipality purchased the curling club for use as a skating rink and curling facility, and the Protestant chapel was used as a community hall, with plans to build an adjacent outdoor swimming pool, with enclosing the swimming pool and creating better change rooms. With the support of the community, the Recreation Committee raised the necessary funds to build the only all-weather public swimming pool in Huron County at the time. The Finastra Recreation Center houses a heated indoor pool, fully equipped fitness facilities, community hall, and is home to the Finastra Early Childhood
Learning Officers Center. Mess Hall, 3 7th Ave.
As with others on the base, the officers' mess was a place of camaraderie, special events, dining, socializing, and also for entertaining distinguished guests. Originally, this 15,000-square-foot building, now a retail enterprise, contained two lounges, two bars, a television room, a dining room that could accommodate 200 guests, kitchens, and washrooms, all spread over four levels within two stories. To the north, just behind the building, the hillock that once surrounded the officers' mess pool can still be seen. A nearby outdoor patio added to the enjoyment of a summer's evening for those visiting the mess. A highlight at the officers' mess, as well as at other messes, was the family dinners held each month. Entire families gathered to enjoy a meal and a get-together, and those attending events at a mess dressed. Women donned evening wear, and the enlisted men their mess kit, that is, a more formal uniform. Local dignitaries such as the town of Clinton mayor, lawyers, physicians, bankers, and their wives were associate members of the officers' mess and were often invited there. It was a place of respite, a place where the responsibilities of command could be left at the door, along with headgear, as none were worn by RCAF personnel once inside. The officers' mess was a private enclave amidst the busyness of the largest base in
Home of the Thunderbolts, 7th Ave, at the end of Toronto Boulevard.
Home of the Clinton Thunderbolts, the champs of 1962. The arena saw the Air Force, as well as civilian teams, face off at center ice, providing fast-paced entertainment for fans of the game. The 23,000-square-foot ice skating arena officially opened on March 4th, 1961, included seating for 500 spectators, dressing rooms, offices, and storage areas. Its ice surface was comparable to that of Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens. Sadly, after the phase-out of CFB Clinton, the arena burned to the ground on October 14, 1987, due to the spontaneous combustion of hay
Mess
stored
hall.
Within it.
Other ranks. 79 7th Ave.
From a central kitchen, food service staff prepared and served up to 3,000 meals a day in its many windowed dining wings for servicemen stationed at the Clinton base. Mess dinners were official occasions requiring formal uniforms with strict adherence to tradition and customs. The most important was on April 1st each year to mark the 1924 founding of the Royal Canadian Air Force. A special Christmas dinner was also held annually, at which officers served non-commissioned members a full holiday feast, and the youngest member of the wing became wing commander for the day. To the south of the mess hall, on the corner of 5th Ave and 10th Street, was Pegasus Theater, also known as Radio City. If you asked the average RCAF member what the most popular pastime was among personnel during their leisure periods, the answer would undoubtedly be the movies. It was equipped with the latest 35mm projectors and sound systems. The theater was also equipped with a spacious stage, which was also an ideal spot for traveling concert parties, recitals, and shows put on by station personnel. Across the road from the theater was a library housing over 4,000
Radar and Communication people. School, Applied Training, 25 Winnipeg Road.
Applied Training was housed in three large Quonset hut-type buildings connected by passageways and an adjoining entrance administrative area. Under the supervision of skilled instructors, radar and telecommunication operators, as well as radar and telecommunication technicians, diligently put to practice all the theory they had learned in preparation for posting in the fields or at some other Canadian Forces installation. The technician knew and understood what was going on inside the black boxes, and the operator used the system of black boxes. There were many devices that were being researched and/or used on the base for wartime efforts that were not yet widely used among the general public. These devices included the handy talkie, a smaller version of the famed walkie-talkie, television receivers, which were closely allied with radar, as well as portable frequency modulated radio sets, that's FM. Television receivers and other equipment were constructed and modified at the school. No other electronics training establishment in the country played a more important role in the fulfillment of the country's demand for qualified electronics technicians than this
Stop
state.
4, Radar and Communication School, 36 Winnipeg Road.
The 150,000-square-foot Radar and Communication School, located on Winnipeg Street, was built in 1952 at a cost of $2.5 million. That's about $20 million in today's currency. It had its own power generators and housed electronic equipment, then valued at $5 million, in its 80 classrooms and laboratories. In addition to the power generators and supply sub-stores for the electronic equipment, the classrooms and laboratories included instructor studies, offices, theaters, workshops, and a detachment of the Department of Public Printing and Stationery. Due to the secretive information contained within them, manuals needed to assist the trainees in their studies were produced at the station. Manuals had to be constantly revised to keep up with changes in equipment. This kept the printing section of this base busy at all times. During its first year, the school graduated 2,000 students, and within 4 years, 6,500 Canadians and 2,325 Americans graduated from its courses. Following the war, the world-class training center at CFB Clinton was designated a peacetime signal school. Over the years, the courses and programs offered at the school changed as technology advanced and new needs emerged, sometimes even internationally. For example, the air radio warfare courses became the Joint Services Missile Indoctrination Course in 1951, and then became the Guided Missile and Space Technology Indoctrination Course in 1960. In 1954, the School of Food Services opened at the station, which was the first organization of its kind in the Royal Canadian Air Force. In 1962, the School of Instructional Technique was moved from Trenton to Clinton. This school provided the basic knowledge, principles, and techniques for instruction. These courses were taken by candidates for the Army, Navy, federal government agencies, civil police departments, civilian industrial corporations, as well as the Royal Canadian Air Force. NATO Air Force officers and the British Commonwealth personnel were included in the student body. Customs and immigration staff from all across Canada were also being sent here for training for about 3 years after the station closed.
CFB Clinton Vanastra Curling Club, 39 First Ave.
The idea of using the curling club as a skating rink was soon aborted and was only used by the Venastra Curling Club. Since the first rock was thrown in the 1950s, the curling club has been very well used. Four ice sheets, locker rooms, social areas, and the accoutrements of the game made for a good time had by all. In 1981, with a provincial grant available for recreation facilities and through fundraising by members, the club was rebuilt, updating and guaranteeing its structural longevity. A new ladies' change room was added in 2001. Form and function required the addition of a few decorative touches and more.
The Ray Dome. 40, First Ave.
The building and dome were built to the specifications of Air Defense Command in 1960 to house a state-of-the-art radar antenna and its corresponding electronics. Radar, an acronym of radio detection and ranging, utilizes pulses of radio energy which show up on a radar set as a single line, the time base. When reflected from a target, a radio echo is sent to the receiver and a vertical blip appears on the time base line. From this, distance, speed, and location are determined. During the war, operators also learned they could identify weather systems with radar, a surprise even to the scientists. On June 9, 1967, also Armed Forces Day, a radar screen was given to the town of Clinton and is still part of the downtown landscape today. Another fun fact. A World War II propaganda campaign popularized the myth that eating carrots helps you see in the dark. The campaign was created to cover the secretive use of radar technology and provide an explanation of why fighter pilots could see targets
Stone
so well
pillars and parade grounds. 2nd Street.
Designated as an historical site in 1984, these pillars and gates stand in mute but powerful testament to Canadian ingenuity, capability, and international diplomacy. The field stone pillars and wrought iron gates on Highway 4 mark the original entrance to the Royal Canadian Air Force, Canadian Forces Base Clinton, established in 1941, site of the first radar and communications school in North America, second worldwide to the only other training establishment located in England as of the late 1930s. They also mark the entrance to the former parade grounds that currently store road salt used to maintain local roads during the winter months. In 1947, RCAF Station Clinton opened its gates to the public for the first time, in conjunction with the nationwide inaugural Air Force Day. Prior to the fall of 1943, there was not a band at the station, and parades marched to a recording of a military band that was broadcast over a loudspeaker system. In the spring of 1944, the station's first bugle band made its debut, with 6 buglers and 4 drummers. Many of the first band members had never played wind or percussion instruments before they started practicing, which was held during the off-duty hours. From the parade grounds in the 1940s, you would have seen the many towers, in some cases raising to 240 feet, that were scattered across the base. These towers were the type that stood on the coasts of the British Isles, enabling radar operators to give adequate warning of the approach of enemy aircraft. Aircraft warning lights on these towers can be seen for miles at night, and during the day, they are visible long before one sees the camp itself. Far-reaching as they are, they give but a small indication of the power of the radio sets, whose antenna they carry, to search through fog and darkness to seek the enemy enable others
to destroy. The Tyndall Farm and the Silo. Corner of 2nd Street and 5th Ave.
In the midst of spring plowing, Norman Tyndall's life changed irrevocably in 1941. 4 officers arrived at his home, and within 48 hours, his 100-acre farm was purchased to become the future RCAF No. 5 Clinton Base. Within 14 weeks of the purchase, the first trainees arrived at the top-secret base to begin their radar and communications training. The first RAF commanding officer, Wing Commander Adrian Cox, felt the farm's silo should remain as a mark of distinction, and as a result, it became affectionately known as Cox Folly. A contractor built a top for the silo resembling the top of a lighthouse, and a few dipoles were added to make it look like a sort of radar beacon array. Curious visitors were told that it was needed for training purposes. No one seems to know whether the top part ever worked as an actual beacon or not. The farmhouse was used as the commanding officer's residence until the 1950s, when it was then moved into the town of Clinton. An electrified fence was put up around the square-mile compound training area by the silo. Guards patrolled the fence, and to be found inside without a pass was a court-martial offense, regardless of rank or
position. Recreation Center and Pool, 13 Fifth Ave.
Built in 1941 as one of the base's original buildings, the drill hall and physical training facility, otherwise known as PT or physical torture, evolved into a very busy recreation and sports center. With the adjacent Olympic standard swimming pool constructed in 1955, the rec center, as it was known, was an important part of social life and exercise at CFB Clinton. Its large gymnasium, 8-lane bowling alley, exercise rooms, classrooms, and ancillary areas comprised 35,000 square feet of space that facilitated countless hours of leisure time activities for base personnel and their families. The building burnt down in 1990.
Thank you for joining us on this historical walking tour of Venastra. For more information of other self-guided tours and trails in Huron East, please visit www.huroneast.com/tours. This audio tour is brought to you by the Municipality of Huron East, with funding from Huron County's Supporting Local Economic Development Program, or SLED.